Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations stance point.
Good morning, everybody. It's Dr. Lee Shepherd here, and welcome to Let's Talk Black Power on AAA Murray Country. I'll be hosting today. Unfortunately, our regular host is unavailable. I'm a Dhirubal Mulurudji Jabbigai Yurukandji woman from far north Queensland, and also an anthropologist as well. First, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we are broadcasting, the Turrbal and Yagara peoples, and pay my respects to the elders past, present and emerging. Today I'm joined by Miss Tabitha Saunders. How are you, Dar?
I'm good. Thank you, Lee.
That's good.
Thank you.
Today we're going to be having a yarn about the death in custody and the outcomes of the Kumanji Walker.
Yeah.
From the Northern Territory.
Mm-hmm.
Tabitha, you've had a look at the coronial inquest.
Yes. And before we begin, I would also like to acknowledge the Yagara and Turrbal peoples of the country of which we are broadcasting from. And I would also like to give a warning that the names of the deceased maybe will be used over the next hour. And yeah, there may be some sensitive issues discussed as well. So, yeah, today we are going to delve into the findings of the police shooting of young 19-year-old Walpri Lurija man from Yundamu in the Northern Territory in 2019, Kumanjay Walker. The Northern Territory coroner, Elizabeth Armitage, has delivered her findings after nearly a three-year inquest. And one of those findings include the determination that former Constable Zachary Rolfe, who fired the fatal shots, was racist, and that his racist attitudes may have contributed to the shooting. Rolfe is now considering appealing the findings to the Supreme Court. So basically, the coroner has handed down that the death of Kumanjay Walker was caused by systemic racism.
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently is entrenched, and also made the point that, you know, in her opinion, entrenched in the Northern Territory Police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Elizabeth Armitage, the coroner, yep, found that former officer Zachary Rolfe was racist and that his racist attitudes may have contributed to the shooting, or have contributed to the shooting. And Rolfe is reportedly considering an appeal to the Supreme Court to have the findings declared void.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was, just on a side note, on my way into work this morning, I was listening to a podcast that is online called The Two Ordinary Cops, who were, you know, coronial findings where they... the findings or a stitch-up. Basically, from their point of view, it was a stitch-up because why would they call, you know, how dare they call Rolfe racist when the coroner said, well, that cannot be disproved. So they made the point that, you know, if it can't be disproved, it's obviously not proved. And we need to be impartial when we're doing these things. And they ran through the process of getting a charge brought into court. And basically they said, you know, we're hunters and gatherers. We gather the information, and they have what they call an opinion file, which is where they will send to the public prosecutors the DPP, an opinion whether or not there was enough evidence for a charge to be brought about. Obviously, in the case of Rolf, whoever put the opinion in obviously thought there was enough to charge him. So
absolutely.
You know, that's why it went to court. Now, as if you're unaware, basically when it finally went to court, the judge disallowed the information that is now found in the coroner's report about how, you know, the, you know, his interactions with Mob Up that way in the past that often ended up with people being, you know, physically hurt, his racist texts, stuff like that, were brought out in the coroner's report, but none of that was brought out in court, in the actual court case.
Right.
So that was thrown out.
Yep.
Because the jury actually did not have the full information in front of them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so the report was 683 pages long,
yeah.
Lee.
Yeah. Still going through it.
Yep, and the coroner, Elizabeth Armitage, made 32 formal recommendations for change.
Mm.
That's pretty hefty, 32 formal recommendations for change.
Yes, yeah.
In her report.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a serious problem within the force of the Northern Territory Police Force, obviously.
Mm.
That's a 32-page, the 32 formal recommendations.
Mm.
The Royal Commission into Black Deaths in Custody was 334
yes.
recommendations.
Yeah.
This is 32 coming from one coroner.
Yes.
So the coroner made findings. So, look, a bit of a background on Kumanjay Walker as well. And again, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, we are discussing the death in custody of a young Walpri Lurjaman. Who was fatally shot in Yundamu in 2019 by Constable Rolf.
Yeah.
The coroner made findings about his upbringing in remote Central Australia, which was plagued by poverty and health issues, as well as his struggle to cope at school because of his disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Walker was deaf in one ear and was likely born with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
Mm.
And spent a considerable period of time in juvenile detention or under some restraint, such as bail or subject to a court order.
Mm.
On average, for more of half of each year, Kumanjay was under some form of restraint. The coroner also explored Zachary's background, Zachary Rolf, who had a military background as well.
Yep.
And there was some dodgy, you know, relationships he had with other people in the military. But she found that he was normalising racial slurs through text messages, and that's very common, apparently, within their organisation to normalise racial slurs. And they're toning it down. They're turning down the whole racial, you know, and they're trying to make it make out to be like, a, you know, locker room talk,
yeah,
you know, yeah,
schoolyard stuff,
you know, and they're trying to normalize racism, basically. And the whole point, really, of that investigation and of the trial was to ascertain whether racism was the key point or the key factor in that young fella's death. Now, that is huge, Lee.
Yeah, it is. It is very
find that a person's death was, and the key factor to that person's death was systemic racism. That should change the landscape of justice in this country.
Yeah.
It really should. It should start making ripples, and if not waves. Honestly, but who's reporting on it? who else is reporting on it? Other than, you know, the independent media. Have we heard anything on mainstream media about this case?
When I was having a look at it last night, I was just looking at the newspapers that were actually reporting on it in the last month, because this only came out recently. So I'm seeing the Sydney Morning Herald, The Guardian, ABC, and then you have blogs, and and also blogs from also lawyers as well, criminal lawyers too. So when I read that, you know, it had gone global, I'm thinking, obviously, it's making more news overseas than it is,
of course,
here in Australia itself,
of course,
which is
that's common. That's common.
Yeah,
that news of racism and you know, against Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in this country always goes.
Yes,
overseas first, and they take it.
And it's interesting because, you know, you're looking at two sides here, two sides of the coin, okay? You've got the police culture, and then you've got, they're working with, you know, mob up in the territory, who, you know, the last massacre was at Coniston in 1920. That's in living memory, you know.
Yep.
And it's still felt today. So, and basically since colonisation, the police have always been involved
in their own investigations.
Yeah, and in also, you know, containing Aboriginal people. So you got to sort of understand where mob are coming from and how they feel, especially when the intervention came into the Northern Territory. It took the power away from communities. They can't make decisions for themselves.
Yep.
They don't have funding for certain things for their own children and communities. So, you know, and you've got people coming in from other states with their, you know, with their own ideas and racist rhetoric, which they're saying, oh, you know, it's just between us friends and stuff like that. I mean, they even had a... what was it, some sort of prize or something that they used to give people. Coon prize or something, excuse my language, but that's what it was called. You know, it's just very racist, and for them not to realise how they're thinking and then informs their acting. And also, you know, it's beyond me.
Yes, unexplainable, unthinkable behaviour. I mean, this is how we live. This is our everyday life.
Exactly.
This is our everyday story as blackfellas in this country. This, you know, constantly looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
You can't move, especially in the Northern Territory, without...
Yeah.
Being under the watchful eye of the cops up there.
Yeah, or anywhere in Australia for that.
Anywhere place, in know? Australia.
We're the most surveilled people on the planet,
absolutely.
Basically.
So...
You cannot say that we are equal, you know. Stating that under the law everybody is equal is just a statement. It doesn't apply... Yeah. To people of colour.
No. It's not even worth the paper it's written on. The coroner, again, she went on to say that his death was, Kumon J. Walker's death was avoidable.
Yeah.
And the failed arrest of the 19-year-old was a case of officer-induced jeopardy. What does that mean exactly? Officer-induced jeopardy.
It comes from the Americas, and it's basically where an officer puts themselves into recklessly puts themselves into danger.
Right.
Yeah. Which then creates the problem that
you go. Yeah. So they create a situation where they have to react. And for them, it almost seems like a sport to react violently.
Yeah.
The coroner found Mr. Rolfe, a very junior officer, did not prioritise safety in the arrest of a vulnerable teenager, such as Mr. Walker, and made a series of flawed decisions that significantly increased the risk of a fatal interaction with a member of the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Local Yundamu Sergeant Julie Frost had devised a so-called 5 a.m. arrest plan to effect a safe arrest of Mr. Walker in the early hours of November 10 in the presence of a local officer who knew him. He was wanted, Mr. Walker was wanted for allegedly breaching a court order and days before his death threatening two other police officers with an axe. But the coroner found Mr. Rolfe jettisoned the 5 a.m. arrest plan, which Judge Armitage also found was not without its weaknesses, and substituted a vastly inferior approach that ended in Mr. Walker's death. Mr. Rolfe hit back at the coroner's findings, saying she came from a place of safety. So he's downplaying that the coroner is who they are.
Yeah.
That they are a very learned person who knows their
who
thing.
He doesn't have their lived,
his lived experience. And how would you know what I've been through? Kind of woe is me sort of business.
Yes.
And backfiring on her going, you've got a level of security and comfort.
Yeah.
You know, that here we go. This is what he actually stated.
What did he say?
The severity of Judge Armitage's criticism inadvertently highlights how effectively the police have safeguarded her privileged position, granting her a level of security and comfort that insulates her from the harsh realities faced daily by frontline officers and, more importantly, by countless victims of crime through the Northern Territory, Mr. Rolfe said. The coroner's infantilisation of Indigenous communities, did I say that right? Infantilisation of Indigenous communities does not empower but rather it diminishes agency and reinforces dependency. Unfortunately, this coronial investigation represents a misallocation of valuable time and resources, missing a critical opportunity to propose genuinely beneficial and impactful reforms.
Yeah, but the whole thing is that basically when a death, an unexpected death or a violent death occurs, a coronial inquest has to be held to find whether there is, you know, whether it was what it was or what else, you know, they had to find out what's going on. That's part of the process. So basically saying that, you know, oh, she's biased against me and I don't want her.
And she comes from a privileged position.
So what's his position? Yeah. You know? I mean, did you mention
his position? Is your position not privileged, Zachary Rolfe?
Exactly.
I mean, and by the way, those are good words by his legal team, by the way. Because I don't think he has the intelligence to you be that articulate. Anyway, I love how he's just flung it back on the coroner.
Yeah, but, I mean, that is a process. That's a process they go through. Okay, he went to court. The process is their police, hunter-gatherers, will gather the evidence. They obviously had sufficient evidence to charge him. And obviously their opinion, an opinion was sent. There is evidence to charge him. So, therefore, taking it out on the coroner doesn't make any sense to me because it is a process through which they go through anyway.
And so they must have got hold of his phone to check all his messages. And some of his messages also provided evidence of his derisive attitude to female colleagues and some superiors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is an all-round nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think I read somewhere as well. He'd been disciplined a number of times for the way he handled Indigenous peoples and for not turning his camera on. What is that camera?
The body cam.
The body cam, turning it on.
This is interesting. This is so interesting, right? There's everything points to this person. going in, guns blazing. He just was going to... Anyway, Judge Armitage, again, the coroner, also noted that the messages on his phone revealed an attraction to high adrenaline policing and his contempt for bush cops or remote policing, all of which had the potential to increase the likelihood of a fatal encounter with Cumminjay. Unsavoury views were consciously or unconsciously embedded in the decisions he made on the night Mr. Walker was shot.
Interestingly, like getting back to it, I mean, basically, you know, the footage that was obviously his camera brought up was shown his use of violence towards, you know, blackfellas up north. 46 incidents of violence, including punching Aboriginal people, rendering them unconscious, had been recorded between 2016 and 2019. And some of these attacks were subject of professional standards and legal complaints. And the obviously the inquest heard of the failure of police and prosecutors to investigate. So what does that speak to?
There were
entrenched
least
systemic
racism. There were at least five occasions, the coroner found, that Mr. Rolfe used unnecessary force and that he had a tendency to rush into situations to get his man without regard for his and others' safety and in disregard of his training. There were instances where Mr. Rolfe used force without proper regard for the risk of injury to persons, all of whom were Aboriginal boys or men, and significant injuries were caused to suspects because of his use of force.
It's incredible, hey.
And then to come back and say, oh, you come from a privileged position, you don't know the pressures I'm under as a police officer. You're a cowboy.
Yeah, exactly. Let loose in an area where you thought you could, it was easy for you to just do what you want to do, because no police officer or anybody has ever been charged with a death in custody.
And is that entitlement plus to you?
I think it is very entitled.
So
up there, like, basically, you know, from what I'm reading, you know, the evidence of culture of racism was even endemic at the highest levels in the Northern Territory. As you said, it was normalised. Widespread use of racist language towards Aboriginal people, including the use of the N-word. So, you know, it's just, it's that type of culture, and also finding, you know, the other issue is, you know, the substantial recruitment of former ADF personnel. Now, anyone who, you know, is in the ADF, it's been found, is more likely to pull a gun out and shoot quicker than one who hasn't been to war.
That's their training. That's part of their military
also,
training.
Rolf also stated that he was trained by the ADF to dehumanise the enemy. Who's the enemy? I thought we were all equal under the law here, Tad.
Dehumanise the enemy?
Yes.
What's that? Okay. Wow. So, look, some more of these coroner's findings here, Lee. They go on to say, when this evidence is considered together with the contempt Mr. Rolfe showed for the hands-off approach of officers Hand and Smith on the 6th of November 2019, so there were two police officers there who were trying to do this, make this arrest peacefully. A hands-off approach when Mr. Walker threatened them with an axe. So they were still trying to defuse the situation, two other police officers. It points to Mr. Rolfe prioritising a show of force over potential peaceful resolutions. The coroner noted also disturbing evidence that Mr. Rolfe had on several occasions recorded and shared videos of his uses of force during arrests.
Mm-hmm.
It is clear that a significant motivation for doing so was because he was proud of, was boasting about, and wished to be celebrated for his physical feats of tactical skill or ability, the coroner wrote. He thought that using force against arrest targets and causing them serious injury was funny.
Yeah.
Coroner Elizabeth Armitage said evidence she gathered over almost three years, showed that Zachary Rolfe was not a bad apple, but instead the beneficiary of an organisation with hallmarks of institutional racism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a cultural thing.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
Within the Northern Territory Police.
Yes, yeah.
In the Northern Territory, majority of people are Aboriginal people.
Mm.
People who go to work for the police force in the Northern Territory know this.
Mm, yeah.
Are they going in with your good intentions, or are they going there to be the new
overlords?
Yeah.
Mm.
Is it a massacre, you know, on the stealth?
Yeah, exactly.
Does the Northern Territory attract racist police officers and justice workers because of the population of Aboriginal people there,
yeah.
The high number of Aboriginal people.
I mean,
is it a game?
That's what I'm saying. It's interesting because, as I said, I was listening to a podcast this morning from two ordinary cops, and they're saying, you know, if you were racist, you wouldn't go. You know, Northern Territory is a high population of Aboriginal peoples. If you were racist, you wouldn't want to go there. To be around them, if you were racist, that
not if you got not if you got guns on your on your hips.
I'm just like, how do you sustain that argument, mate? Seriously, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You're saying to me you're being impartial, but you're not. You don't even you have no understanding of the trauma generations have. And the ones now are going through that has been induced by government policies, police, over-policing, you know, who escalates, you know, like the intervention. So, you know, it taking away their self-determination.
Absolutely.
And basically putting them into a POW camp.
Yep.
And being surveilled.
They're refugees in their own country.
Exactly.
On their own lands.
Yeah.
You know, this is the same state, you know, where they hose homeless people off the front footpaths of their
yeah,
shops.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. It's just an interesting, the perception, you know, I think I was reading another article as well last night, where the NT police got upset because one of their ministers said something along the lines of, you know, there will be repercussions for this. And he's saying, you know, how it hurt their members and stuff like that. How dare you express that? And the minister basically just came back and said, you know, there'll be repercussions because we're going to investigate this and we're going to get some findings into this, which... we've got the findings, but, you know, basically a coroner's inquest, they can give any recommendations they like. It's basically, will it be acted upon?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have my suspicions, Lee. I don't know. I have my suspicions. First of all, Elizabeth clearly is a female.
Yes, yes.
Quite young.
Yes.
I have a really bad feeling that her report is going to get ripped to shreds, right? Elizabeth, the coroner, also goes on to say, to be clear, many of the police officers who gave evidence to the inquest impressed me as curious and culturally sensitive officers who had dedicated their working lives to serving the largely Aboriginal communities they were tasked to police. Mm. However, after a series of grotesque racist mock awards were revealed at the inquest, handed out at Christmas parties by the force's most elite tactical unit, the coroner found racism was widespread. That no police member who knew of these awards reported them is, in my view, clear evidence of entrenched systemic and structural racism within the Northern Territory Police. You know, and this is the other thing, just hours before Kumanjay Walker was shot, the nurses, the local nurses, evacuated.
Yes.
They knew it was going to come down. Yeah, they knew exactly what was going to happen. They were going to they were fearing for their lives. So they shot out of town.
Did they?
Just before just hours before he was shot. So clearly they had been, I don't know, maybe they'd been informed that there was going to be an arrest and to get ready for some, it might be some first aid might need be administered.
It is interesting, and I'm assuming they were European?
I would say so.
Yeah, it sounds familiar to the Palm Island where the plane, the airfield was shut down, the only thing running was the ferry, and the only people really allowed off the island were that were evacuated from war zone, which actually is a media beat-up, were white.
I find that very interesting that the nurses had evacuated only hours prior to the shooting. So they knew something was possibly, or that someone was unhinged, maybe. No nurses in the community. So Kumanjay was taken to the police station after the shooting and administered first aid, but passed away on the floor of a police cell.
You can't really give first aid to someone who's been shot three times.
No. With no nurses in town.
Oh.
There was no operational local health clinic to treat him, which exacerbated the trauma, the coroner wrote.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't just a clear, outright case of just, pure, unadulterated, racist shooting that, and just because he has a uniform, he has protection.
Yeah, but as we all know, every time there's an inquest into a death in custody, we don't brace for, yay, we finally, get some justice for that family, because we know there will be no justice.
No.
There still isn't, and it is about time that reform started coming through. Policy reforms, and I think also too, I think I read that the federal government had handed those powers back to the states. They've got the closing the gap, right?
Yes, they do.
Closing the gap. They want to close the gap in deaths in custody.
Yeah.
They want to close the gaps. Sorry, we just had a visitor out the window. So I was getting distracted. Sorry, everyone. Oh. When you think about it, they've got the closing the gap. Now they want to close the gap.
Mm.
The federal government's got to take those powers back.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of giving it to the states who, historically have never done right by black fellas,
Closing the gap. Right.
It's never going to be closed.
Not at this rate.
No.
So, look, if you've just tuned in, you have tuned in to Triple A Let's Talk Black Power. My name is Tabitha and I'm with Dr. Lee Shepherd, filling in today for Paula. And we're yarning about the coroner's findings on a young fella, Kumanjay Walker, who passed away in 2019 at the hands of a police officer who shot Kumanjay Walker three times. And the coroner coroner presiding over the case, Elizabeth Armitage, has basically, in a nutshell, given her findings, basically that, Kumanjay's death was because of systemic racism in...
Yeah, I think the first time that systemic racism has been brought into a coronial inquest, I think, was it in 2020 for a lady in Victoria, Tanya Day, I think?
Yep, yes.
That was the
yes.
first time it had ever been used, well, right. brought in. But then again, they did not identify it. At the end, the findings were it was not systemic. It was maybe... Yeah. unconscious bias on the part of people.
Yeah, it's quite...
Involved, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, it's just... I think it's time that, change occurs. I mean, it runs so slow here in Australia. Things just do not. How many more people need to die? How much more oppression do you need to put on us? Before you start,
Honestly,
treating us as human beings.
Yeah, I honestly think that at this point, Lee, that we can't. We need outside help.
Yeah,
we need outside. How does that work, though? We need outside intervention because Australia is so caged up. Mm. In the racism and the racist rhetoric it's ingrained.
It's very ingrained.
In the culture.
It really is. And I can't see it an outside intervention because, they can, the UN can say all they want.
Yeah.
But the government can reject or accept.
This is true.
And it depends on what they want to do that year and who's in power.
Mm. And even when... Australia is outed on a global stage. Yeah. What do we do? It's almost like we dig in harder.
Yeah. It's sort of like you don't tell us what to do.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're a sovereign nation. Well, we are a sovereign people, but we don't have the equal rights under the law.
No. And to have a coroner come out and do that and say that. I would like to think that that is a wake-up call for our justice systems to have a very good look at what racism really is in this country. How racist are our laws?
Yes.
We know how racist they are.
Yeah. We live it. We're under the pump every day.
Well,
they might be under the pump, what they think is under the pump in communities, but them community people, they're reacting to, and it's not a perception on the mob out there. This is lived experience. Mm. Would any of that mob ever go to the police out there?
For help? No.
Some do, but how much help do they get? I mean, I'm not saying all Northern Territory police are racist.
Mm.
I'm just saying that it's just entrenched in their culture. It's normalising the racism. And it's not a schoolyard thing. You know, this is people's lives we're talking about.
Yeah.
Kumanjay can't come back.
No.
He's gone.
No.
And nobody, even when I was listening to the podcast this morning, he was not even... he did this, he did that. They just, blame the victim...
Mm. Mm.
Who, had all these issues, intergenerational trauma, learning difficulties.
He was like deaf.
He had fetal alcohol syndrome, that type of thing.
Mm.
Deaf in one ear.
Disadvantaged.
Yeah, he was severely disadvantaged. And trying to say, basically, well, maybe I shouldn't say it that way, but basically, in my opinion, it came across to me as he deserved it.
Yeah.
You pull a scissors on me, that's like a gun. I'll shoot you. But do you need to shoot somebody three times?
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And yeah, I was in that community about 2 weeks after that had happened, and yes, I heard some stories that would make your hair stand up on end about what actually really the situation was. But you know, the same thing happened to that young fella, Kumon J. White, who was a who had disabilities as well.
I think he was Kumon J.'s Walker's cousin back in 2024.
So they, you know, it's just
it's ongoing. And relentless.
Yeah.
It really brings us down.
And then to just disrespect, you know, a scientist and a legal expert and to say that they come from a privileged position and that they have really no idea what it's like out there in the real world, you know, and our lives are at risk every day from these Aboriginal people.
I think it's the other way.
Yes, right.
I mean, seriously, he's making himself a victim.
Yeah.
And basically, it's all about him.
There's whole communities of people.
Yeah.
You know, hundreds of people per community.
Yeah.
And you're saying that you felt afraid.
Yeah, I mean, you're the one with the gun.
You walk around in that community daily, weekly, and you feel threatened. I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah.
All right, so if you've just tuned in, you're listening to AAA Murray Country. My name is Tabitha.
And Lee, and filling in for Pauline.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us. Next week should be an interesting show.
Yes, I think so.
We're going to delve into what is happening, the new legislation at surrounding Victoria Park or Barambum in down there in Hurston, right next to the hospital. So the government has just put through some new, dropped some new legislation, which apparently leaves massive gaps, massive loopholes for the Olympic Committee to jump in and build their stadium right there in Victoria Park.
Yes, yeah, it's going to be a great good old yarn about that, and we'll be breaking it down with, we do have some special guests.
We do. Victoria Park, of course, used to be a camp. We know people who physically were born in that, that, on that space, in that area. So it has cultural significance as well as being the only, one of the last green spaces in the CBD. And it's beautiful CBD green space.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine a stadium right there.
In between the hospital and the ICB. Yeah, it's smart. So we're going to have a yarn about that next week. So, look, if there's anything you would like to discuss or you would like us to discuss or is something you would like to yarn about on air, give us a yell. Give us a call.
Yeah.
Our number is 38. What is it, Lee? I can't see that far. 3892-0188.
Yeah.
So give us a call on that phone number, 3892-0188. Or you can contact us via the website, info@aaa.org.au. I'd also like to thank Community Broadcasting Foundation and Brisbane Pride for sponsoring the Let's Talk program. And you can also listen back to any of these episodes via the Community Radio Plus app.
That's it.
Mm.
Yeah. You've been listening to AAA Murray Country.